This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Pedlin Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It is April 11th, 2018. Welcome to Bicycle Talk, this week with my co-host, Fran Storch.
Howdy.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, please call or text us right now at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Or if you are listening to this on podcast, you can also send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also visit and comment on at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. If you want to listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk, whus.org or on iTunes. So I'm going to start out with Ron's Rant of the Week. I was at a summit last week, a pedestrian and bicycle summit sponsored by the Bike Walk Connecticut group. And so I am going to rant today about motorized vehicles only looking for other motorized vehicles and not vulnerable users like pedestrians and cyclists. So if you drive a motorized vehicle and you're out there, and I understand it's really, really difficult. You have to drive very defensively all the time. You're always watching out for another car to make sure they don't run into you, or a truck to make sure it doesn't run into you. But remember, there are other users out there on the road too, and they are what we like to call the vulnerable users. In other words, we have no protection around us if we are walking and or cycling. So please just be sure to look for everything. Driving a car is an amazing and important responsibility, and you really need to treat it that way. It is a privilege, and there's a lot of responsibility that goes along with it. So just pay attention when you're out there driving your motorized vehicle. And we can have a little bit of additional discussion on this. Additional discussion on this on Facebook, and you can also see that I have a current link to the Connecticut Driver's Manual, which is a real enlightening experience. By the way, take a look at that. Open that up, check it out, and you can see all the laws that pertain to bicyclists or pedestrians. You can also, if you just go up into the upper right-hand corner of that, it's actually a PDF download that you pull out. If you go to the upper right-hand corner and just type in either pedestrian or bicycle, and it'll highlight all the pages in the manual that talk about bicycles and pedestrians when you're learning to drive your car. And the reason I bring this up is because I think we forget. I know we forget. And it's you know, when was the last time you took a driver's test? For me, it was when I was 16 years old, which was an eternity ago. It was a long, long time ago. So anyway, I go to a bike ped conference last weekend, and what do? I learn things. I learn things that I was not fully aware of. And you, you know, sometimes you need to get a rebirth, a reset on your knowledge on this. So again, go to my Facebook page, Bicycle Talk Facebook page, and check out the current link to the Connecticut Driver's Manual. If you're listening to me from another state, and I know I have a number of people out there that do that on podcast, go to your particular state's motor vehicle department, driver, whatever it is, DMV, whatever, Department of Transportation page, and download the current driver's manual. I think you're going to be surprised. It's a dry read, but it's a good read. A lot of it's going to be information you already know, and then there may be some information in there that you've forgotten about. So I highly encourage this. So that brings me to on a positive side, and on a positive side is the Bike Walk Summit presented by Bike Walk Connecticut last Friday, which I did attend. And again, I'm saying right once again, I learned a lot from it. It was really, really a good thing. I learned a ton of information from it. I learned about some new organizations that are out there. I made some contacts. We're going to probably be bringing some people onto the show, which we will have on just so we can talk a little bit more about what is going on in the state and in generally in bicycle and pedestrian advocacy all around. So it's a good thing. It's definitely a good thing. I had a great time. I have one other on the positive side, which I need to cover right now, and that is a huge shout out to my co-host and partner here, Fran Storch, for covering for me last weekend or last week for the show.
Oh, and, it was awesome.
And she had Amber Pierce on. And if you haven't caught episode
Women and Bicycles,
episode 93 yet, Fran's still excited by it.
It was great.
If you have not caught episode 93 yet, please go and check it out on whus.org or on iTunes because it was a good episode.
It was so great. Amber's awesome.
Time. Yeah, Amber is awesome. Amber's a great time. We love Amber. Big shout out to Amber Pierce. Big shout out to Fran Storch for covering for me. I do appreciate that.
Yeah, big shout out to me.
Yeah, you. That's you. That's you. So, the maintenance minute. Okay, I'm going to take a moment to refer to the abundance of sticks on rail trails and looking to avoid them while riding your bike.
Babe, I'm leaving.
And why do I bring this up? Because Fran and I went out for a nice, beautiful rail trail ride on Sunday.
It was a little chilly, a little breezy, but with me.
Yes. Okay. All right. Are you done?
Do you get the joke?
Yes. Yes. So we love having Fran on the air with us. It's always entertaining. Always. So we're out on this rail trail ride, and there's a lot of sticks down from the winter. Pieces of eight. Okay, stop. So there are a lot of sticks down on the trails. There's a lot of blowdowns of trees. And so the trails need a little maintenance. They need a little picking up. So if you have a chance and you can get out there and do that, or if you are riding along and there's something large enough that you feel like you can pull over on your bicycle and then drag it out of the way, please do that. The reason I say this is because if you pick up a stick, okay, and you flip it over into your rear wheel and then get it caught between the rear derailleur and the rear wheel, you will probably take the rear derailleur off of the bike or you'll break spokes in your wheel.
I've done that.
And Fran did that on a road ride once, mm-hmm. of all places.
Yeah.
On a road ride.
In like July.
And I got the distressed call, you've got to come get me. I was in New Hampshire. That didn't work.
Yeah.
So she had to find someone else.
Yes,
but
Rob came and got me. Shout out to my buddy Rob in Salem.
Yeah. So it can literally destroy your rear derailleur on your bike, and it can cause a lot of damage to your bike, too. So what do I do if I pick up a stick? If I'm riding along on a road and or rail trail, and I hear it hit the rear wheel, and I can feel some resistance in my pedal stroke. Well, here it is. This is a tough one now. Stop pedaling. Please stop pedaling, because if you continue to drive that through, you will then possibly force the stick to go further or deeper into the spokes or into the rear derailleur, and you will cause damage to the bike. So don't try to ride it out. If anything, you might pedal backwards to maybe release it a little bit, but the wise thing to do would be to just pull over. Just get off the bike, remove the stick, and then continue pedaling. So the maintenance minute is taking care of your bike, watching out for the abundance of sticks on the currently on the rail trails and on the roads as winter is happening, and what to do when you run into that problem. I have one other thing I wanted to put on the positive side. I'm going to back up here just a minute because I saw something this morning that was more exciting than hearing peep frogs and seeing skunk cabbage coming up as spring is now rapidly approaching. Fran's going to know what this is because I believe she was short a little ways ahead of me when we were leaving our house. But what did you see this morning that was just like the most inspiring positive thing? Can you guess?
Forsythias?
Nope.
Frogs?
No.
The rail trail was open? let's see. What else would be inspiring?
Are you ready? Are you ready for this?
Chai with Sarah's almond milk?
No. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Street sweepers.
Oh, yes, I did see the street sweepers. That's right. Oh, it's so excited. And you're right. I forgot. I'm so sorry. I forgot.
So, I
saw them and I got just as excited as you.
Those of you who live in the dark areas of the country, otherwise known as the snow belt, we get a lot of product that is put down on the roads over the wintertime.
Yes.
And the product is put down so that your vehicle that you are driving will not slip out when it's icy or snowy. And it builds up after a while, and you get a lot of sand on the road. And then also, as the spring rains come, the rains wash the sand down to the street corners, and it pools up, so you have these big piles of sand, and obviously very hazardous for your bicycle. So that's a problem. But what they end up doing here is they bring out the street sweepers, and the street sweepers will actually pick up the sand and get rid of it so we can have nice clear roads. So one of the most positive signs of spring for a serious cyclist like we are, anyone who rides a bike, really doesn't have to be a serious cyclist, just someone who's out there riding their bike, is to see the street sweepers out, because they're making our life much, much easier and safer. So we're really psyched about that. So I had to mention that too. Moving on to the show a little more, I want to point out that I got to say, I was watching the Paris-Roubaix this past weekend. Paris-Roubaix is one of the many classics, many spring classics that are happening now over in Europe. And the Paris-Roubaix is different than some of the others. Although the Tour de Flanders also has cobbles, so does the Paris-Roubaix. And so the cobblestones have become known as a kind of a signature of this race. The race was designed many, many years ago in the town of Roubaix, where there is an outdoor velodrome. And the owners of the outdoor velodrome wanted to figure out a way to promote the velodrome. So what they did was they staged a race which started in Paris and finished in the velodrome in Roubaix. So the riders will come into the velodrome at the very finish after doing this incredibly grueling ride, and then they have to do a full lap around with a bell lap and finish the race. And so they finish on a bicycle track, which is really exciting and cool. It's the smoothest part of the entire course, because the 257-kilometer one-day classic has 54 kilometers of cobblestones. And I'm talking not like something that a town put down as a cutesy little thing to dress up their streets and give it kind of a European flair and make it very touristy. We're talking about the old, old cobblestones, and they are old. And there's actually groups that maintain the integrity of the cobblestone roads that are in northern France. And so it's a cool race. It's interesting. If it rains, it's really tricky, because now you've got moisture on top of the cobbles. They're round, they're slippery. And if it's dry, it just becomes this big dust bowl. And if you get a little bit of both, you end up with kind of a bit of a mud fest. It's really, so they had a bit of all on this year. So it was very, very interesting. And what happened was, as it always does, is people try to break away, and they try to get away before you get to the cobbles. And then, you know, hopefully you keep your bike upright through the cobblestones, because it's really hard to do, and then put a little distance on the pack. Well, a break did occur, and there were four people away. I can't even remember now whether it was three or four. And they, at about 30 miles to go in the race, Peter Sagan was positioned to take a solo attack, and made that attack and rode away from the group. There was only about a 30-second lead on the leading group, and Sagan he basically ran them down, caught on, and then the gap started getting bigger, because Peter Sagan is wearing the world champion jersey. He's a strong, strong man. And in that same pack was the Swiss national champion. And so he was also in there. So we had two extremely strong, strong riders in there. And they started working together, eventually got rid of the Swiss rider was Sylvain Dillier from BMC Racing. And they ended up working together, and then it became both just the two of them. And it was two guys working real, real hard, taking equal pulls, equal turns, lots of conversation between them. I love bike racing. I just love it. I love watching it. I love the camaraderie of it. These two guys, they know that one of them is going to win the race and one of them is not. And they spend a lot of time working together, taking equal pulls, maintaining the brake. They got it up over a minute, so they really did a good job, and they were able to go into the velodrome together, at which point where Sagan had a little more gas in the tank, we'll say, at the very end. And but it was a very exciting race. For those of you who like bike racing, I'm sorry if I get excited about this, but it's really, really fun to me. I love watching it, and I was catching a live feed online, and which is a little frustrating because sometimes it goes away, but I was able to watch the whole thing, and it was pretty neat. It was a pretty neat thing. So anyway, big shout out to Peter Sagan, who was disqualified from the Tour de France because of a bad decision by referees, and I'll admit a bad opinion by me at first until I saw the footage over and over again in slow motion, and then you realized really that he was just protecting himself and he was not causing a problem with another rider in a sprint situation. But anyway, Peter Sagan went on to come back with a vengeance, win the world championships again, and now he has just won one of the most prestigious classics of all times, the Paris-Roubaix. So I wanted to talk about it just a little bit before we get into more subject matter here for the show today. And so write me on Facebook or send me an email if you are an enthusiast of bicycle racing and the Paris-Roubaix. It's fun. It's good stuff. And then we have another classic coming up this weekend. They're every weekend there are these one-day classics, and they all have a certain level of character to them. I think the one coming up this weekend, we're going into a little hillier terrain, so it's going to be an interesting race. I want to talk a little bit about, because I just came from this summit, I want to talk a little bit more about pedestrian laws and legislation nationally, what's going on as far as the laws go with bicycles and pedestrians. And I've got some information that I clipped out of the Connecticut Driver's Manual, which I think you'll find very, very interesting. I also pulled something from the National Conference of State Legislatures, and it's about pedestrian crossing and a 50-state summary as to what goes on there. You can look that up too, which is kind of cool. And it talks a lot about 2012 pedestrian deaths rose to their highest level since 2006, increasing by 6.4% from 2011 to a total of 4,743 pedestrian fatalities. That's injuries rose by 10% same time period. This is disturbing to me, and it's disturbing to me. And I know I talk about this a lot on the show, but I'm going to point my fingers at the distracted driving thing. I've had done shows on this. I've talked about it. I've talked about cars that are self-driving and how it's just not a good idea yet, and we're not there yet, in my opinion. And you know, this is something that we need to start driving our cars again, and cars and trucks, or stop driving them and get out and ride your bicycle and walk to where you have to go. Only use the motorized vehicle when you truly need to use it. Maybe rethink your plan. Let's ponder that a little bit and see if maybe there's a better idea out there. So anyway, there's a great, again, pedestrian crossing 50-state summary, which is on the National Conference of State Legislatures. You can look that information up. There's some good stuff going on there, which I think you should check out. In the meantime, I decided to pull information down. This is for pedestrian law, and this is in my state, Connecticut. And the rules are pedestrian vehicles must yield the right-of-way to pedestrians within a marked or unmarked crosswalk. I learned this one last week. When a pedestrian steps off the curb and enters the crosswalk or is within the same half of the roadway as the vehicle, vehicles crossing a sidewalk must yield right-of-way to pedestrians or other traffic upon the sidewalk. Pedestrians must yield the right-of-way to vehicles when crossing outside of a marked or unmarked crosswalk. where traffic control devices are in operation, pedestrians may only cross between two adjacent intersections or in a marked crosswalk, and may only cross an intersection diagonally if authorized by a traffic control device. So these are things to make note of with this. One of the things that I picked up from the conference was if you have a sidewalk which is continuing from one side of the road to the other side of the road, so you get to a point where there's an intersection. Let's say it's a four-way intersection, and the sidewalk continues, but there are no markings in the road for a crosswalk. The motorized vehicle is responsible to stop for the pedestrian as they are walking across that area, which does not have to have a designated painted crosswalk. So this is something I didn't know, because I thought, well, you know, you can only really legally cross a road where there's a crosswalk. Not true. You can legally cross a road where there's a continuation of a sidewalk on the other side. So kind of a good thing to know. That prompted me to pull down the Connecticut Driver's Manual because I wanted to see what some of the other rules were that were out there. And I learned a lot of really cool things when I did that. I also learned a lot from the conference that I was at, because there were a number of notable people speaking about it, including a traffic engineer from Boston who was down, and he was talking. He was actually a professor of engineering and traffic design. So he had some really, really good things to say. It was so what I'm going to tell you is that if you have a chance in your state, or if you have a chance next year, we have a summit here every year in the state of Connecticut that you can go to. My encouragement is not just for you to go as a concerned citizen and possibly pedestrian or cyclist, but I want you to also go to your local town, talk to the engineering department. Talk to the people that work on traffic safety in your town. Maybe you could bring your town planner. Invite them to it. Have them go to this conference so they can learn what's going on. Because the information that's going out, yeah, for a lot of us, you're preaching to the choir. We when we're avid users of the road, we tend to learn the laws very quickly, and we tend to remember them because it's of great concern to us and our safety on the road. So it is a little preachy to the choir type of situation, but boy, if you can make friends with your town planner or your town engineer and get them to come and join you for one of these conferences, their eyes will be opened, because there's so much that they probably don't know or need to know. So This is my personal advocacy piece here. If you want to become an advocate for cycling and pedestrian safety, it begins with stepping out of your comfort zone and going and introducing yourself to the proper people. Maybe even getting your state legislator to show up and have them take a look at from your area and have them see exactly what's going on. It's going to cost them a day's worth of time. They're going to learn a lot. They'll get lunch. It's a good thing. So this is why I am strongly encouraging this to happen. So from the Connecticut Driver's Manual, and I'm sure there are other driver's manuals like this, but I know that every state is a little different. Some states are, let's say, less protective of the vulnerable users than my state is. And my state's getting better. Every year it gets better. We've initiated some good laws here, and we are watching out for the vulnerable users a lot better than we used to, and we are putting legislation through which is helping protect them. So these are things that I would like to review with you. I like to do this in the spring because here in Connecticut, we kind of winter, and when we winter, we stop riding our bicycles, and we don't get outside as much as we should. So what happens is those who drive motorized vehicles who are not particularly friendly with those of us who ride on self-propelled means, they're probably looking at it as, oh, God, winter's great. There's no more bikes in my way. You know, there's no more people out there that I have to watch out for. Well, guess what? reset. Here we go. It's spring. We're back out. The weather's getting nicer. You're going to see more of us out there. It's going to happen. So again, this is another little personal advocacy piece. If you can find local, hey, a radio show or maybe a public access TV show that might be interested in hearing about some of this and hearing your views, back yourself up with some information and go and have a chat. Let's get the word out here and let people know that it's, you know, that we're very, very concerned about this. I want you to go out and have fun and be safe. So here it is. Bicycles are considered vehicles when used on the roadways. They are expected to follow the same rules of the road as motorized vehicles. So I am shouting to both parties here, okay? As a motorist, you should know that a bicycle has the same rights, the same privileges, and responsibilities as you do. You should expect to see bicyclists on the road driving with traffic. You should not be surprised to see a bicyclist using the left lane when turning. Additionally, when a lane is too narrow for cars and bikes to drive by side by side, the bicyclist will take the travel lane, which means driving in or near the center of the lane. Respect for each other will aid in the smooth flow of traffic. Bicyclists may not be easily seen in traffic. You must be alert for bicyclists and be extra careful when approaching them. Just as motorists have different levels of skill, bicyclists also have varying levels of skills. A skillful bicyclist rides predictably and holds a steady line. An unskilled bicyclist may swerve unpredictably, ignore traffic signs and signals, and ride without a light at night. If you see an unskilled bicyclist, be ready for any sudden movements. So one of the things that I saw at the conference is there, we had someone down from Maine, from Bike Maine, and they ended up getting a grant, and they got the a bunch of reflective materials that they were able to purchase and also get donated to them, and they handed them out to the local law enforcement people, so that if a local law enforcement officer saw someone that was out riding at night or walking at night and didn't have reflectorized material, they would pull over not to write them a ticket or cause a problem, but to hand them free materials to make them more visible. What a nice, friendly, positive approach to solving the problem. And this is another cool thing to reach out in your community. It's another thing that you can do. So we're just trying to make everyone a little safer out there, that's all. And encourage the fact that, you know, riding a bike is a great thing. It has so many positive benefits. It's the health benefit alone is worth so much more than sitting in a motorized vehicle and just sitting and doing nothing. So there's that too. So as a bicyclist, you are to follow the rules of the road and you are required to ride on the right side of the roadway. You are to ride as far to the right as you deem safe. Listen carefully. As you deem safe. This is the state of Connecticut talking, okay? This is not in all states. There are other states that are not nearly as friendly about this, but the legislators put through a piece of a bill a year or a little over a year ago that changed the wordage on this and the verbiage. And so it's as far to the right as you, the cyclist, deems safe. Bicycles may ride in the left-hand lane of a right turn lane if they are proceeding straight. Got that? So you don't have to ride, and it's not wise to ride as far to the right as possible when you're in a straight lane going forward, because someone may make a right turn into you. You need to get out in the lane. And the state of Connecticut law says that you not only need to get out in the lane, but you need to get out to the left side of that lane. So if the traffic light that you're stopped at or the stop sign you're stopped at then allows you to go forward, you proceed in front of the motorized vehicle and then pull over to the right as safe as you deem to be, as far to the right as you deem safe. So these are things that people just, they're not really aware of. You must obey all traffic signs and signals and use hand signals to let others know what you plan to do. Communication. This is a big one. I preach communication to people who ride bicycles in traffic. If you don't form a solid piece of communication with the driver of the motorized vehicle, you're going to be putting yourself in a lot of danger. So you want to be able to communicate. You can communicate by pointing at the vehicle, looking directly at them, waving to them, whatever it takes to get their attention so they know that you're there. And then use your hand signals. And I'm not talking about the hand signal that requires just the middle finger to go out. We want to stay away from that one. Okay. You are also required to yield to all pedestrians. So if a pedestrian steps out in front of you and you're on a bicycle, shout out here to UConn, by the way. Here we are on the university campus and people don't always pay attention to this. You need to stop just like you're in a motorized vehicle. That's the law. That's the way it works. You are required to wear a helmet if you're under 16 years of age. And if you are 16 years of age or older, you should consider wearing a helmet as a safety precaution. All bicyclists should wear brightly covered clothing, use required lights and reflectors, and keep your bicycle in good repair. So there are your little basic rules as a bicyclist. As a driver of a motorized vehicle, you must yield to bicyclists in intersections as you would for pedestrians or other vehicles. Interesting. You must yield the right of way to a bicyclist when a bicycle path or bike lane intersects the road. This one I love, because how many bike lanes have you been on? Yes, there is one right up here in Storrs. And instead of having a stop sign at the bike path for the motorized vehicle or a yield sign for the motorized vehicle, there are stop signs at every intersection. I want those to go away so bad, because here it says, stated in the state of Connecticut, you must yield the right of way to a bicyclist when a bicycle path or a bike lane intersects a road. You got to let us through. We're using the safety lane. Keep us safe, please. You must yield to bicyclists in a bicycle lane or persons on a sidewalk before you turn across the lane or sidewalk, i.e., don't take a right-hand turn into a cyclist or a pedestrian. Please watch. And we're not watching for just cars. Remember what I said earlier? It's not about just looking out for cars and trucks. It's about looking out for everyone when you're driving your car. Fines are doubled for failure to yield the right-of-way to a bicyclist. How about that? I like that too. When approaching or passing a bicyclist, slow down and pass only when you are able to give a minimum of 3 feet of distance. And now this is one of Fran's pet peeves, because we see this a lot. We'll be riding down the road and we're doing the safe thing. We're riding as far to the right as is safe for us. And a motorized vehicle come up behind us, and they will, instead of slowing down and waiting for the proper opportunity to pass us, they will zoom around us and force a motorized vehicle coming from the other direction to come to a complete stop or possibly even pull off the road so they can get around us. Don't do that. Please don't do that. Fran calls it the Oreo cookie effect. Yeah.
The Oreo maneuver.
The Oreo maneuver, yes.
Don't be the creamy center.
That's right. Don't be the creamy center. Right. So you want to really avoid that. And it says right here, pass only when you are able to give a minimum of 3 feet of distance. I'm going to add, it says also to be aware of the width of your vehicle or any load or trailer that you're hauling. That's another good one, pulling a trailer. Oh, gosh. Be careful after you have passed a bicyclist. Do not slow down or stop quickly or turn right immediately. A motor vehicle's brakes are more powerful than a bicycle's, and you could cause a crash. Do not sound your horn close to bicyclists unless you have a good cause to warn the bicyclists. Sounding your horn alert to your presence may startle them and cause them to steer into your path and crash. There may be a good reason for the bicycle to be riding in the travel lane, such as roadway hazards not visible to motorists. Yeah, we see a lot more than you do, because we are the vulnerable users that are directly on the pavement or the lack thereof that is in front of us. So you've got to really start, you know, realizing it's more than we're just a lot more vulnerable than you are when you're driving in a very large vehicle. When making turns, watch carefully for bicyclists entering your lane. Be especially careful if you see children riding bikes on the sidewalk. They may come out onto the road. That becomes a sidewalk debate, which I don't like to get involved with because it gets a little, I get a little ranty there. But moving forward, never turn sharply in front of a bicyclist and do not force a bicyclist off the road.
Yeah. That's happened to me.
Well, it's happened to a lot of us. And I can say not only has it happened to me, it's happened to me multiple times. And it's really annoying because what are you thinking?
Thank God I didn't die. Yeah.
Are you thinking that I can do this to this person because they're not important anyway? Well, maybe they're the surgeon that's going to save your life.
Maybe they're anybody.
Maybe they're anybody. Maybe they're someone's mother, someone's father, someone's sister, brother, aunt, uncle, whatever.
Why would you force a person off the road?
Why would you do
this? Who do you think you are that you're so much better than this person that you have a right to be on the road more than they do? Why would you risk hurting someone?
I think I lit a fire under Fran. What do you think?
Oh.
So although bicyclists are required to ride in the direction of traffic, you should look for them riding anywhere on the roadway. Well, this is in the Connecticut manual. This is great. You have to learn this if you're going to get a driver's license in this state. Be particularly careful around bicyclists when the roadway is wet or covered with sand or gravel. Like motor vehicles, bicycles cannot brake as quickly or turn as sharply under these conditions. These conditions affect bicycles much more than vehicles, motorized vehicles, I'll say. Bicyclists may use the full travel lane in instances where the shoulder or bike lane is unsafe due to various conditions, including but not limited to those just listed. You may pass slow-moving vehicles, including bicyclists, in a no-passing zone if you can make the maneuver safely. Big word there, safely. Cooperate with bicyclists. They are required to use hand signals as shown when turning and stopping. However, keep in mind that a bicyclist may be unable to signal if road or traffic conditions require them to keep both hands on the handlebars. Let's talk about, rough roads where you're hanging on tight. Look for other clues of a bicyclist's intent, like turning their head or looking over their shoulder before changing a lane position.
Also, there's when you're turning from Maple Road to Davis Road.
Yeah.
Because you're descending, you're about to make a left, and you're trying to brake and also signal. And I always have a difficult time. Why do I do that? I have a difficult time taking my hand off the handlebars to signal to go left on Davis because I'm descending.
Well, 75% of your braking power is coming out of the front brake and 25% out of the back. So because of that, you have to give yourself a lot more time if you're only using your rear brake to slow your bike down as you're making that turn.
Yeah.
So something to keep in mind is that, I'm going to make this turn. I'm going to start using my brake a little earlier, and then I'm going to put my arm out, and I'll have enough time to slow down because I may have to stop because there may be a vehicle coming in the operation.
That's right.
In the opposite direction.
Right.
So, you have to plan for that, and that just requires more experience. You just, after you do it and you practice it a lot, then you'll get better and better at it. But you're right. Some people can't ride without having both hands on the handlebars. I've experienced that in leading certain rides that we have where I have riders that I'll take out for a group ride that will have to pull over on their bicycles to reach down and pull their water bottle out and take a drink. And so whenever I lead a ride like that, I always encourage a little clinic to practice that. And I usually practice it at a standstill in the parking lot. And then I say to people when they're riding along, and this is something if you are one of these riders that has difficulty reaching your water bottle while you're riding, all I want you to do is practice taking one hand off the handlebar and reaching down, just tapping the top of the bottle and then putting your hand back on the handlebar. Practice doing that over and over again until you get comfortable enough with it where you feel you can. If the road is super rough underneath you, keep both hands on the bars.
Yeah.
Just don't even try. Don't go there because you're going to get yourself in trouble or you could possibly get yourself there. Okay, the bicyclists had a very, very short list, but we go to the motor vehicle drivers and the list just keeps going here. So stop left, turn right. Let's stop left turn, right turn, or right turn. Consider a bicyclist's speed when you pass. If you are about to make a right turn, you must not pass a bicyclist immediately before you turn. Oh, gosh. Yeah, we've been here. We've all been here. I have a great story with my good friend Scott, who I used to ride and race with years ago. And we were coming down a state road, which is not my first choice, but we were coming down a state road. And we had a vehicle, and we were scooting along because we were both training for bike racing. So we're going, you know, average 20 miles an hour. We're scooting along. I'm sitting on his wheel, and a motor vehicle comes around us, just gets by us, and then makes a right-hand turn into a gas station. And all I heard my friend Scott say was, right, really loud. And we both just turned. We leaned into it and just turned, went in with the car, and rode the car up to the gas pump. And then had a conversation with the driver of the vehicle about, hey, don't do that. Please don't do that. Now, that was probably when I was younger. The conversation was probably a little louder than it is these days because I've learned and I've matured. And I am much better at approaching people when they have an infraction like that that I need to deal with. And they need to have a teaching moment from it, so, and a learning moment. But that is something else that I encourage all of us out there as advocates for cycling to learn to control your anger and your, your desire to tell someone how it is in harsh words.
Where's the gas station?
It's been a number of stations. I think it is now a mobile station. It's on Route 32 just before you get to the highway crossing of Route 6. There's a gas station on the right hand side.
Oh goodness!
It was a Circle K. It was a Citgo at one time. It was a Phillips 66. Remember those? It was a mobile station. It may even be back to being a mobile station now. It's that gas station.
I remember being
Circle
K. Yeah.
But the key is, and then I'm gonna put a little extra on this one. If you're riding a bicycle and you're in a situation where there are a number of places where motor vehicles can turn out, it's the most common place to be hit. It may be the motor vehicle coming across the road in front of you. It may be them taking you out by making that right-hand turn into you. But it's the most common place that people get hit in traffic, heavily trafficked situations. So as a cyclist, boy, you got to have your radar on. You just got to be looking all the time. You got to be looking at signals on cars, which some people don't use. We won't get into that right now. That would become another rant of the week. But you have to be looking at the language of the drivers that are coming and going and moving around you. It's it's a real skill to learn how to ride in traffic. The best way to be riding in traffic, though, is to be in the middle of the road and be seen. And I know it frustrates those who drive motorized vehicles, but you know what? We all should slow down a little bit. It's not that big a deal when you're in a heavy traffic situation. You're going to see that traffic gets slower anyway. So what's the big deal? You know, just take a deep breath, wait your turn. Everybody will get there. So anyway, to avoid a collision, you should slow down and let the cyclist clear the intersection before making your turn. This is such basic, simple information if you're one of us. But if you are driving a motorized vehicle, you need to think about these things. Okay, next, do not stop, park, or drive on a designated bicycle path or lane unless you are entering or leaving an alley or driveway, performing official duties directed by a police officer, or an emergency situation exists. You must yield to bicycles in the bicycle lane. You may turn across the bike lane, but may not drive in the bicycle lane when approaching a turn. My favorite picture, I saw this about maybe 6 or 7 months ago. There was a big e-bicycle debate going on in New York City. And New York City they were basically ticketing people if they saw them on e-bikes in the city. They don't want them in the city, which is ridiculous, and for many reasons. I do believe that law has currently been, it's been adjusted. So there, you can now do that, especially because of the fact that a lot of the e-bikes that are being used in New York City are delivery vehicles. So reducing carbon footprint, doing good things for the environment, helping people get places healthfully, and you're going to ticket them for it, and you're going to confiscate their bicycle. That's what New York was doing. They got, I believe, in one of our previous episodes, they got a bad shout out on a rant on that one. But anyway, the picture that I'm referring to showed a New York City police officer pulling over an e-bike parked, and he cut his car to a like an angle on a diagonal straight across the bike lane. And it's like, really? You know, you're blocking the only safe mode of travel that someone may have in that situation. And you, as an officer of the law, are violating this right here. So, anyway, when parked on the street, check to the sides and rear for bicyclists before you open your vehicle door. Yay, we know about that. We talked a lot about the Dutch Reach, which our friend from
Holland had never heard of,
but it is a thing. And so the Dutch Reach will just redefine this one more time and, you know, give you a little more information what you do instead of opening your door and just throwing it out to the side. What you do is you use your opposite hand. So if you are driving here in the United States and you're driving in a car where your driver's seat is on the left-hand side of your car, you use your right hand to open your door. What this forces you to do is it forces you to look in your side view mirror at the same time. And when you do that, you will possibly see a cyclist coming up. So you don't want to open your door into them. It's called the Dutch Reach. It works. It's effective. Just you should always check before you open your door. Go ahead, open your door into an oncoming truck. See what happens to your door. You'll have a pretty major problem with your vehicle. But anyway, when parked on the street, check to the sides and rear for bicyclists before you open the vehicle. We did that already. You should check for bicyclists in your path before backing. Be especially cautious near schools or residential areas where bicycles may be present. So this is all straight from the Connecticut bicycle. This is the driver's manual. So this is something you're going to see in other driver's manuals, hopefully more of this really good stuff in the driver's manuals. And it's just it's just basic common knowledge and understanding the fact that bicycles and pedestrians are people too. That's what I like to tell people. We got to watch out for one another. We got to try to save a few more lives out there, make our streets a little bit safer. And it begins with you. So if you're sitting down in your motorized vehicle and hitting the key, if you happen to be listening to us on the radio right now and hearing this broadcast, let's think about this a little bit. Okay, think about the vulnerable users. And we call ourselves vulnerable users because we do not have 4,000 pounds of steel surrounding us. We are not real crash worthy if we are to be hit by one of your large vehicles. I'll point out once again, I know I made this point a few weeks ago on a rant, but you know, maybe reconsider when you're purchasing a new motorized vehicle to maybe purchase something that's a little bit more practical and one that you feel you have a little more control of and better visibility. Because the visibility is key. If you can't see us, then we're going to have a problem. We're all going to have you're going to have a problem because it's going to come back to you too. So, you know, consider a responsible vehicle. That's all I'm saying. I'm not going to tell you what you should drive, consider a responsible vehicle. It's a good thing. So there's a lot of really good things going on right now in bicycling and in urban development because more and more people are now riding bicycles in the cities. And they're doing this because many of them are falling into a category, the millennial category, where they have recently graduated from college or did a few years ago. And they are moving to the urban streets and they're deciding that automobiles or motorized vehicles are no longer something that they feel they need. They're young. They're fit. They are...
Greg.
They are my son, Greg. Shout out to my son, Greg, who's coming out to see me on my birthday. Yay! They are folks that are more conscious of their money. Many of them are more conscious of their money because of the fact that they have large school debt that they're trying to pay off. So therefore, they look at the $8,000 or more a year that it require that is required to, you know, drive a motorized vehicle, and they're they're trying to do things a little more responsibly. And so we're starting to see in the urban streets of bigger cities, we're starting to see a lot more pedestrian and bicycle activity. And you think about it, it's like my son lives 2.5 miles from work, and he normally will take the train or he'll take the bus. He has a pass to do that, which is considerably cheaper than even putting gasoline in a motorized vehicle, not to mention the parking involved with a motorized vehicle. And on a good day, he can walk to work if he wishes to. Or he could ride a bike, but he doesn't do that. But that's another subject for another time. And he gets out and he gets his fresh air and he gets his exercise. He's very fit from all the walking he does because he lives in a city, and people who live in cities tend to be more fit than those who live in the outlying areas, because the outlying areas require different sources of transportation. So, it's growing, and it's growing at a pretty rapid rate, and it's time to pay more attention to this. It's time to pay more attention in your town to see what you can do to help out for this sort of thing. Unbelievable advantages in public health and equity and livability and fun when it comes to using yourself to transport yourself instead of connecting yourself to a motorized vehicle. There's just so many cool things you can do. And there's different ways you can do it. There's the standalone bike path, which is, it's out there. There aren't very many of them. There's what they call a cycle track, which comes from England. And then, of course, there is the lane that you'll see in an actual road where it will be marked with paint and sharrows. And it will explain to, hopefully, those who drive motorized vehicles that bicyclists belong there and that the motorized vehicle does not belong there. But the one I like the best, this is a term that came, this was Peter Firth, who is a professor of civil and environmental engineering at Northeastern University in Boston. And so he pointed out a number of things, like 26% of all trips in the Netherlands are made by bicycle. And he was such a fascinating guy to listen to, because he ended up spending a year over there for either study work or sabbatical work. I can't remember exactly what it was, but he was over there and he got to walk the walk and talk the talk and live the lifestyle of people that are using bicycles for transportation. And he is enlightened because of it. And he preaches a really, really good story. And it's a cool thing. We have a traffic and engineering professor here on campus who came from Europe. And he is very outspoken about this and the ways that we can make our roads safer. But the cycle track, going back to a cycle track, what is a cycle track? A lot of people don't understand this. It's very common over in Europe, and it should become more common here. The cycle track is actually a separated lane for the bicycles. It could be a two-way lane, which actually takes up less space in general from what we were taught. And rather than having one lane on each side of the road, there's just one lane on one side of the road with coming and going traffic. So you've got both accesses going in either direction, but wide enough so bicycles can go either way. The cars will be parked on the outside of that lane between where the cars are parked and the barrier for the cars to parallel park next to. and the bicycle lane or the bicycle track, and then a little bit of a barrier to a sidewalk. There's a sidewalk on the other side. So it really just makes things a lot safer. So if you're a town engineer and you're listening, and I know engineers love bicycles, I know you do, because they used to hang out at my bike shop all the time, reconsider when you're putting in your roads. Reconsider if you have the room for it. Look at how you could maybe put a bike track in instead of putting in sharrows in your road, instead of putting in, you know, a lane out there, which is pretty desirable, but not really 100% safe. And reconsider when you're looking at the width of your sidewalks, how much pedestrian traffic do you really have? How much do you really need? And what are your requirements by state and federal law? Because I see a lot of towns that have sidewalks that are way too wide. They don't really need to be as wide as they are, and they would be much more accessible if there was a bicycle track there instead. So anyway, I learned a lot. I'm going to have some additional guests on the show, because I ran into a lovely woman from an organization called Watch for Me CT, and it is basically working directly with the Department of Transportation here in the state of Connecticut. And it's communicating better with people when you're driving, when you're walking, when you're bicycling. There's lots of great information online about it. And their website is watchformect.org. So you can check that out. It's pretty cool. That's going to wrap things up. I've got a few closing comments here for the day. We've got some upcoming events. Coming up, we have the New England Bike Walk Summit on April 26th through the 27th in Boston. You can access information on that at 10times.com/NEBWS. And there's going to be discussions and panels and talkers. And it's going to be a summit similar to the one that I went to, I think on a little bit larger scale. I'd like to make a big shout out to my good friend Tyler with the Farm to Fork Fondos, which are all coming up, and your old pal Peddlin Ron and co-host Fran will be there to greet you, because we're involved with that this year, which is really, really fun. So please check that out at farmtoforkfondo.com. National Bike to Work Week is in 2018, will be held May 14th through the 18th. Bike to Work Day is May 18th. It is a Friday, and there will be a gathering in Hartford at the Old State House at 8 a.m. There's a ride coming up locally called Ride Around the Quabbin. It's around the Quabbin Reservoir, and it is Saturday, June 16th. And it says here, I love this part, not much traffic, plenty of hills, it's not a race. Like that. It's a 62, a 100, and a 125-mile ride from Rutland, Mass. Around the Quabbin Reservoir. It's beautiful. Also, on that same note, the Seven Lakes ride is coming up on Sunday, June 24th. And there's a 62-mile ride, a 25-mile ride, a 45-mile ride, and a 20-mile ride. And this is from our friends at Nearac Earth. On July 28th, the Thread City Century ride will be leaving from Edward Garrison Park in Chaplin, Connecticut. And you can check all these out by going online to the particular websites. If you need information on that, you can write to me or address it on Facebook, and I can point you in the right direction. My name is Peddlin Ron. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, the lovely Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast and would like to comment, you can send an email to me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. And you can listen to more and past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, please send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Peddlin Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.